Welcome to the Experience Points Podcast, episode number 16 for the week of March 11th, 2009.
Welcome back to the Experience Points Podcast. I'm George Albor.
I'm Scott Chester.
And we are the co-creators of experiencepoints.blogspot.com, a site dedicated to serious but not humorless analysis of video games and culture. And today we're talking a little bit about community management. And what got me interested in the subject was a recent post by Lee Alexander on Gamasutra. And she interviewed, I believe his name is Mike Tinney, and he's the North American president for CCP, who are the developers of the EVE Online, which is a...
You knew it was coming. Like, even getting to the title EVE Online, you have to go through a bunch of machinations and corporations and
stuff. Oh, yeah.
Well, very indicative of how the game works.
Yeah, absolutely. and EVE Online is an MMO that is a very challenging MMO. I've tried it myself, and it's a, you know, if you haven't played it before, it's a space MMO, and you're in your little spaceship doing your thing. This has actually gotten quite a bit of news recently because I think a few weeks ago, one of the biggest corporations in EVE Online, and if you don't know, in the game, players can make corporations in very similar in the ways that
fashion,
they can
like
make
guilds.
Like guilds from World of Warcraft and a lot of other MMOs. And these corporations, you know, run trade vectors and all sorts of weird scientific stuff that I have no idea what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, one of the bigger fleets, which was called Band of Brothers, was infiltrated by one of their competitors from Goonfleet, which are from the Something Awful people, and essentially they brought this gigantic corporation to its knees, and it essentially crumbled apart and factioned, and it was a huge political upset and a very big deal in the in-game universe.
Very Machiavellian ways of doing it, infiltrating them at the lowest levels, working up. I heard that at one point the president of the corporation's right-hand man was actually a double agent.
Right. Fascinating stuff.
Yeah.
It's like out of a James Bond movie or something. Anyway, Lee was talking to Mike Tinney about their success. And, you know, compared to WoW, they're not that successful. I mean, to be honest,
compared
no
to WoW,
one is
no
successful.
One is successful,
yeah. I mean,
compared to WoW, Mario isn't successful.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he is. But still, I mean, you get the idea.
Exactly. Yeah. They've got something like 256,000 players compared to, you know, Warhammer Online, I think, has 300,000 players. So, you know, they're not very large. At the same time, they've been steadily growing. They're really happy with their user base.
And it seems like the dedication that their player base is densely dedicated. Like, it seems like for me there's a lot of casual WoW players. Some might even have an account but don't even play, maybe like once or twice a month or something. It seems like a lot of the EVE players are very dedicated to what they're doing.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, they're deep into it. If you're into EVE, you're pretty deep into EVE.
Well, because you have to be deep into EVE.
Yeah, exactly.
The learning curve on this game is just astronomically high,
which is why I've never even tried it.
Yeah, it's I tried it for, you know, the free week trial, and it blows my mind.
Yeah,
how difficult it was and how just kind of hard and unmanageable it was, at least for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm knowing that I'm not alone.
Yeah.
Anyway, the Lee asked him about, you know, their success and kind of what they attribute it to, and I thought it was interesting that he talked about the relationship that the developers have with their users.
Mm-hmm.
And that they're really kind of pay attention to what users want, you know, through the forums. They do meticulous tracking
mm-hmm.
of what their players are doing and what they're enjoying out of the game.
Mm-hmm.
They mentioned in the article that they hire an economist, or I don't know if they hire him, but there's an economist that studies the makeup, and I just thought it's an interesting subject.
So, mm-hmm. So where do you want to start with the EVE, like what she was asking him about how they are able to kind of carve out a little niche success for themselves in the face of a juggernaut like WoW?
Yeah, part of it is the approach that they go. I mean, one of the things that Tinney was saying was that they're not aiming as high. Mm-hmm. When you know that you're not aiming for the type of user base of WoW, that it, you know, frees you up a little bit. And if they're aiming for that greater connection and keeping those players there and keeping those players coming back and potentially bringing in new players, you know, it's a slow boil kind of approach. You're not looking for huge numbers like Warhammer Online was looking for.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, it's a scale game. It seems like a lot of games that come out are trying to shoot for something like WoW, but I don't even think WoW was trying to shoot for something like WoW when it came out. You know, I mean, it's not to say that their success is accidental, but it's not that, you know, they might not have laid out their business plan thinking that they'll have over 10 million people.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like when games come out like Age of Conan or something like that, yeah. Now the thing that people are shooting for is to unseat WoW. It seems like something that you would be better off focusing on, you know, strengthening your base like Eve is doing. I mean, why try to hit a home run your first time out of the park?
Exactly,
you know?
Yeah.
And not even that. Like, why try to hit a grand slam your first time up? You know, yeah. Like, you have to build things.
Yeah, I mean, one of the quotes that Tinney says I think is cool. He says, in terms of suggesting how other people might do similar tasks, he says, set a very reasonable goal to build a very small community. Don't aim low, but build a biz model that supports an early adopter mentality and then support the hell out of this community.
Yeah.
And I think that aiming that way, to say that a key part of the gaming experience is the relationship between the developers and the players is mm-hmm. really interesting to me.
Did you start playing WoW when it first came out?
No, I think it probably took me about a year.
Okay.
It took me a little while.
And do you think... I mean, this is kind of far back for you to remember at this point, but when you first got into it, do you feel like there's anything that was different about that experience than there is now?
I mean, the game is very different.
Do you think it was more... Because what Tinney is saying is that, you know, you're trying to get a core group of people and then make sure to support them because they're the ones that will be really building the game experience. And so for something like WoW had to have gone through that period as well. And I'm wondering how long that period was for WoW. Like, when you got into it, it was a year in, which right now is actually a small percentage of how long WoW has been around.
Yeah, I remember the community being pretty welcoming. When I see what Eve has
mm-hmm.
in terms of their community management, there's nothing to compare it to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Eve Online has essentially a governing body called the Council of Stellar Management.
Mm-hmm.
And these are actual players that are elected by other players.
Mm-hmm.
And they've met with the developers in the Netherlands,
yeah.
You know, and set something up and talked about where the players want to see the future of the game. That's mm-hmm. something that I've never heard anyone do. I don't think anyone's ever done that before.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of, you know, community involvement in the forums in WoW, but you don't see a lot of Blizzard employees getting involved, you know? I think WoW has the approach where they set up the tools that allow the communities to form themselves. And it's something that is appealing in MMOs, of mm-hmm. course. But it's not something that I feel they've been involved in, at mm-hmm. least not to the extent that Eve has.
Mm-hmm.
So in the early days of my WoW playing, it felt somewhat similar because I'm playing with friends and playing with new people that I meet, and we're setting up guilds ourselves and enjoying that. So
yeah, that's interesting, because I think that for someone like me who doesn't play MMOs at all, that's one of my biggest concerns about, you know, I feel like it's kind of a catch-22. I don't really want to get into MMOs until I feel comfortable, you know, jumping in. But I won't feel comfortable in MMOs until I just jump in.
Yeah.
You know, like, I won't feel comfortable in that kind of space until I get in there. Yeah. But I don't want to be in that space till I feel comfortable.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's hard. Like, for something like WoW, I'll probably never really get into WoW because I feel like I'm just too far gone.
You're also a Mac user. Well, actually, WoW's on Macs.
So. Well, WoW's on Macs, too, and I can always dual boot, like, you know, true. Windows. Like, it's like I really have no excuse. And, you know, if I wanted to pick up a relatively cheap gaming rig, you can, if you're smart about it, you can put together something that will work on most games, yeah. And you don't have to spend an arm and a leg. But it's just that it's so hard to get someone like me motivated to get into EVE Online.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if they could do anything to change that.
Do you find community involvement important to your gaming style?
I've always said that for me, playing a video game is more like reading a book.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's plenty of times where I enjoy being around a group of people that have played the same game, and you know, to extend the analogy, like a book club, but I don't want to do group reading. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of the same thing as group playing. I'll do co-op every once in a while and stuff, but I still am in this very, what I consider, old mindset as far as gaming goes.
Yeah, you are, Scott.
I'm an old fogey, what can I say? But when I think of gaming, I don't think of a community, an immediate community experience. I do think of a community experience like, you know, how we write on our site and we interact with commenters and we write on other people's sites. Like, that's, I do consider that, but I don't, like, when I think about playing a video game, it's usually a solitary experience.
Well, so what about like Little Big Planet, right? Mm-hmm. So there's, not only are you interacting with other players in co-op mode, but they've also built those levels for you. But there's also that third party involvement of Sony themselves incorporating, you know, or encouraging that type of communication. You know, I mean, how important is that to you, that you've got ease of access to third parties? And would you like to see even more involvement from the publisher and the developer?
It might not be a problem about level of development. I think it's just sliding that stuff into a medium, or sliding that stuff into a platform that I am used to. Mm-hmm. Because the reason why I like Little Big Planet and I like playing with folks and using their levels and so forth is that it's already on a system that I'm pretty comfortable with. For me, even playing a game on a computer, like always connected online, it's far different from what I usually do, which is play on consoles.
Right.
And the other thing about Little Big Planet is that it's very, the way you communicate in Little Big Planet is far different than the way you communicate in WoW or any other MMO or even any other online game, period. Mm-hmm. Even something like Left 4 Dead. Most of the people I communicate with in Little Big Planet, it's by pantomiming and doing facial expressions rather than typing or, you know, descending into a new vocabulary. You know, like when you're talking about WoW, you'll start busting out these terms that I only have a vague knowledge about. Like, oh yeah, I'm just gonna suck aggro, you know, from the witch, and then I'm gonna cast AoE on the thing. And it's like, I kind of know what that means, but like, you know, not a huge amount.
Yeah,
and
it's so, not immediate understanding the way it's become.
Exactly, it's more like a translation thing for me. And Little Big Planet doesn't really do that because it's and I've written about this before. It's not a very text-based means of communication.
Sure. Well, what about like forums and stuff? Is that something that you would ever see yourself involved with? You know, the type of community outside of the game itself?
Oh, gosh.
Like, you know, do you think it's funny because you hear stories occasionally, particularly stories back in the day, mm-hmm. of little kids who wrote letters to the creators of the video games, you know, who were like, oh, Mr. Miyamoto, you know, I loved such and such. I don't know if people do that anymore. I mean, do you think that you'd ever contact a developer? I mean, it's funny because I feel like it's easier now than it ever was, mm-hmm. especially with, you know, the rise of indie games and stuff.
Yeah.
When I go online and I'm reading other people's websites and stuff, it's not surprising anymore to see people visiting blogs, right? Mm-hmm. You see Clint Hawking is out there, Genova Chen is out there, 2D Boy guys are out there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people involved in the wider community. Mm. And to see something like EVE Online where not only are the developers themselves doing it as individuals, but it's becoming part of their business model.
Right? Yeah.
This is something that they're using to advance not only the game that they make, but themselves as a corporation.
Yeah. I think that's one of the best developments that the internet and game, I think that's one of the best developments. Yeah, it is kind of like, it's one of the best developments of the internet game relationship, because now communication is so much easier than it was and so much more immediate than it was. You know, as far as forums go, I could see myself posting on maybe, you know, a specific game only if I had something very important to say about it. Because I'm not really that into dedicating myself wholly to one game as folks that play EVE or WoW like to do. I don't think I necessarily would, you know, be a very useful forum guest for them, because, you know, I'd go off on like a long treatise on one aspect of the game and then not post anything for a really long time about it. You know, it takes a certain level of dedication to a specific game to be valuable for that kind of research that the companies are doing.
Yeah.
This relates to a news story that we've been wanting to talk about for a while, and it was about Call of Duty, the Infinity Ward side of Call of Duty.
Yeah, careful now.
Yeah, the folks that created Modern Warfare were making some noise about using Twitter to do something. And then there was a lot of ideas about what they were going to do, and it got kind of out of hand. People were thinking that there'd be like Call of Duty on Twitter or something. But what it ended up being was that it was a suggestion box for them. You could tag your Twitter responses with #MW2 to tag them and send them what you wanted to see in the next Modern Warfare game.
Yeah.
And I thought that was very indicative of where we are as far as how players and developers communicate these days.
Yeah.
And I really enjoy that because I think it helps. Like, let's take some companies that we know for sure do a lot of player input, like Valve.
Like, oh, yeah.
You know, how much does that help Valve?
Yeah, probably, I mean, a great deal, you know? I mean, Valve is a really interesting company as well.
Yeah.
We can get to them in a second. Another good example is Criterion, who does Burnout.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of community involvement on their website.
Mm-hmm.
They have a Crash FM, their own podcast,
yeah,
that players can listen to and send in questions to. And it creates the sense that the video game is an existing thing and that the players and the developers are part of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a stretch to suggest that developers are part of the games that they make even after the game launches.
Especially these days with games being so much more malleable than they ever were.
Exactly. Yeah. And now it's even less of a stretch to say the players involved also. Mm-hmm. So now it's interesting, but when I think of a game like Burnout, or when I think of a game like any of the Valve games, it becomes something that's almost an amalgamation of the game along with the developers, along with the players, and it's continually changing, and it's pretty cool, you know, to know that the developers are there to listen to you.
Mm-hmm.
about those games, and also know that you get that sense that they're gamers.
Yeah It's definitely nice to see a less patriarchal setup between the game designers and the players. It's not that they're just laying down these rules that the players will have to live by. There's a dialogue going on, and that's why I really like the Twitter idea, because it's simple, it's fast, and there's actually people checking them with regularity. You don't need to wade through a bunch of forum posts to aggregate all this stuff. You can organize it much more simply with something like Twitter.
It's funny though, because I don't know how many people will actually be using it. I like that it's there, but I'm not going to send Call of Duty guys any Twitters.
Well, it depends. Was that something you do? Or? If I had played Call of Duty Modern Warfare, I might. It's still on my list of games to play, because I think it won't take too long to play as far as I can tell.
Well, I mean, one of the reasons I mentioned it is that Gabe Newell recently gave a keynote address at, I believe it was an Austin Developers Conference, and he said that the future console wars are not going to be about technology necessarily, but more about who can connect the publishers and developers to the players, which is, that's quite a big statement.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm unsure about how many people are going to actually find that useful.
Yeah, I think it depends on how dedicated they are to it, and it's hard to know when you'll go through some kind of paradigmatic shift, as to how people feel, how entitled they feel to give their opinions to the developers, because I still think a lot of people exist in this mindset that they're basically a passive audience, and that if they want a different feature for a game, they just need to wait till the next game, or they just need to hope that the designers are already planning to do something different.
Yeah.
I don't think people realize how responsive I can only really speak about the American developers, since they're the only ones that
you're not Japanese.
Yeah, they're the only ones that write in English, and they're the only ones who I interact with.
Yeah.
I just searched the Modern Warfare 2 tag on Twitter, and right now the most recent one was 30 seconds ago.
Wow, you're
so
right.
I mean, like, this stuff is very active, and just to read a couple of them, one of the guys says, also, it would be awesome if players could make their own player online and on the campaign. One person says,
destructible environments would be sweet.
Yeah, destructible environments
would be
sweet.
I agree, Mr. Person. No noob tubes.
No noob tubes. That's one of the dangers. for a 15 or 20 kill streak, you should unlock a minigun for 40 seconds. Like, and so
that's really specific.
Yeah, I mean, like, these people are giving everything from, like, no noob zores lulls to thinking about how many seconds you should have an available gun for.
Yeah, there should be hostage type games where you would have to save a teammate,
which seems like it could be something that's tenable. I mean, that seems like something you could actually implement that, you know, they don't. And then, you know, now they could aggregate these things and ask people, hey, this person suggested this. How does everyone else feel about it? And then get a sense of you know, what kind of response they have. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, that is pretty cool.
I wonder how much this happens for foreign game developers.
Huh.
What do you think? Like, I cannot see, this could just be a bias on my account, but I cannot see Square Enix doing anything like this.
Yeah, you know, I don't know.
I don't want to, like, be completely talking out of my ass here, even though I am, but...
Well, let me talk out of my ass for a second, okay?
I just think that, you know, because, of course, we don't read or speak Japanese.
Okay, but here's a good example. There's a huge PC market in Eastern Europe.
Yes.
A lot of smaller developer houses developing games, like The Witcher is a really well-known Eastern developed game. Yeah. There's a bunch of stuff coming out of there that is really cool.
Yeah.
Some of that stuff has the, you know, the possibility of mods, right? And I know that a lot of these PC companies in Eastern Europe give more mod opportunities to their players and encourage that type of behavior and interaction with the game.
Yeah.
And if by allowing someone to make a mod, I think that's a huge leap forward.
That's true.
I mean, that's one of the starting leaps, right? I mean, mod creation was one of the first ways players were able to interact with a game that wasn't just playing it.
Exactly.
And that was, you know, way back.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about maybe, you know, Doom territory or something like that. So that's a good way of being able to evaluate how much the developers and the players interact without having to know the language. And I could not ever see Nintendo putting out a mod tool set or Square Enix putting out a mod tool set.
Yeah, and I guess that's kind of what, you know, Gabe Newell was talking about.
Yeah.
Is that connection between ourselves and the developers and the people that we have to interact with beforehand, you know? Because it's not just Nintendo as a developer, but Nintendo as a console maker.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the hardware itself, right?
Mm-hmm.
If the Xbox continues to get in my way and, you know, not giving me possibilities to interact in certain ways, you know, like DLC, for example. Microsoft asks publishers, rather demands them that, you know, you have to charge a certain amount for your games and you have to charge your DLC, you know, in certain segments.
Yeah.
So you can't have all of your DLC be free.
Mm-hmm.
That's a needless separation between developer and player. If the developer and the publisher want to release DLC that's, you know, good content like Valve does continuously, which builds the community, you're not segregating anyone, right? DLC is a great way to encourage people to keep playing your games.
Mm-hmm.
If you have someone like Microsoft getting in the way, that's going to hurt the developer, you know?
And the player.
And the player.
Yeah, I mean, it all trickles down to the player, unfortunately, in that case. Yeah. Before we wrap up, do you think this interaction between the player and the developer can ever go too far? Like, can we get to the point where we don't want the developer to be, instead of being responsive, the developer might become reactive?
Yeah.
You know, do you think that is a danger? Like, what if someone, you know, what there's like a very vocal minority of people that want something in a game, and then the developer misinterprets it as the majority wanting it and then changes it to the detriment of the game?
Yeah, and that's the kind of the point with a lot of the Twitter things. I mean, how many people are actually responding? Is it going to be accurate? You hope that it's representative.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, this is problematic for me because, you know, Jonathan Blow's been sending me love letters the past few weeks. And, I've only talked to him a couple of times. It's a little uncomfortable.
Might have to get the police involved.
it's actually, in all seriousness, it's interesting reading some of the comments from, you know, Jonathan Blow and Clint Hawking and Genova Chen, because a lot of times they'll respond to criticism.
Yeah.
And it's a little uncomfortable because you want to say, this internet space where we talk about your video games, they're a little private, you know?
it's the private, public internet.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Yeah. I love it when they come on and encourage more developers to do it.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's a, you know, as a reader, it's a little weird because they don't want to say, you know, all of the mean things they might have to say about the games that they make.
Well, there's also a need for a vetting process. Like, you know, everyone behind closed doors, a bunch of players discuss a game, and it can get heated, and you know, you might throw around some strong language, but out of that meeting can come more productive criticism that are not personal attacks,
right?
Or just personal preferences,
and developer involvement might throw that
exactly. And it, and if the developers are in on the personal attacks and you know, immature rants part of the feedback, that might be destructive to the system. Developers should take a look at what people are saying about their games, but obsessing over it and deeply trolling every single forum and reacting to every single criticism immediately without any reflection might be a bit dangerous, because you might fall into a decision that is not actually a prudent one.
Yeah. Although, yeah, I agree with you completely. Yeah. There is a long way to go, though. You know, like even basic things like browsing levels in Little Big Planet. You know, uh-huh. I could see a growth in good community management. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that it's something that developers are going to be pushing towards or something.
I definitely think that
get a community management job.
Yeah, I think those jobs are going to be more and more important. You know, eventually when the economy rebounds and more. When more developers can create more games, and with the continual rise of broadband internet connections, this will be more and more realistic, and more games that are even single player based or traditionally single player based, like Little Big Planet, will find themselves in need of community management. Even if it's not online multiplayer, you still have a community of people playing because the internet connects people and yeah. creates a community out of them.
Yeah, and it's that weird blend between marketing and, you know, encouraging players to help out, you
yeah.
know, make the game part of their own.
It is. And I think it's exciting time to be making and playing games, because something like this wouldn't have been able to happen in the 80s, because you would just need to write you know, a bunch of snail mail letters to Nintendo, and then they would just get filed yeah. away by some intern that really didn't care about it.
Yeah, plus everyone was wearing tank tops and stuff and bright colors. It was terrible.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I said, it seems like every other week I am thankful that this is not a video podcast, so people wouldn't be able to see my sweet neon headband that I'm wearing right now.
It's pretty rad.
Yeah.
Guys and girls.
All right. Well, I think we'll wrap it up right there. If you want to send an email to us with your opinions about anything we talked about or any of the posts we put up there, it's experiencepoints@gmail.com.
And we also accept comments on the posts and these podcast posts. We update the site experiencepoints.blogspot.com Monday, Wednesday, and Friday evenings.
All right, and until next time, thanks for listening, thanks for reading, and have fun.
Have fun. Bye-bye. Every time we do.